Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome. This is Through the Smoke, Radio at Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. We have got a lot to cover this week. This is going to be an amazing show. Primarily, my guest is Dr. Grace LeMasters. Dr. LeMasters is one of the two primary researchers who've done the firefighter cancer study. This new health analysis conducted by the doctors at the University of Cincinnati found that on-the-job exposure to soot and toxins create a major increased risk for certain types of cancers among firefighters. You're going to be absolutely blown away when you listen to what Dr. LeMasters shares with us. She's going to be sharing some real basic information. This isn't going to be some complicated scientific stuff. She's going to be talking about the stuff that you and I understand, the stuff we run into on a regular basis, and things we need to do to change. No big deal changes. Easy, simple changes that can make a big, big difference. So in just a few seconds, Dr. Grace LeMasters is going to join me, and we're going to have one heck of a great interview and a great discussion, something that honestly no firefighter should miss. But first, I've got a bunch of headlines and other news-related commentaries I want to share with you. Today, December 18th, is the anniversary of the tragic deaths of FDNY Lieutenant Joe Cavalieri, firefighter Chris Bopp, and firefighter Jim Bohan from Ladder 170. They died in the line of duty on December 18, 1998. They were operating on the 10th floor of an occupied multiple dwelling. Firefighter Bohan, Firefighter Bopp, and Lieutenant Cavalieri were operating at this residential high-rise fire. They ran up to the 10th floor to search for victims, as any of you would have done, and they were met by a massive wave of heat and smoke that killed all three. The heat wave, or fireball, may have been propelled by a gust of wind coming through that fire apartment. The automatic closing device on the apartment door had been removed or had malfunctioned, and the building's hallway sprinklers did not activate due to a closed valve. So we'll have some links for you to look at down below there that you can click on to check out more about that fire. You know, December's a tough month. December's a tough month. In Keokuk, Iowa, on December 22, 1999, Keokuk firefighters Dave McNally, Jason Biting, and Nathan Tuck gave up their lives trying to save three kids. Like any of us, without regard for their lives, they ran into a burning duplex on that morning to rescue three trapped kids, twins Robert and Rebecca Cooper and Jessica McFarlane. There was no happy ending. All six of them died. And on December 16th of 03, firefighter Thomas Brick from FDNY died while operating a structure fire at a Manhattan mattress warehouse. And then, of course, Worcester occurred just a few weeks ago, the anniversary of the Worcester fire where six firefighters were killed there. We've got links to all those below. Our point is, it's easy to get focused on the holidays. It's a great time for us to have fun. And while all line-of-duty deaths create an opportunity for us to learn, this time of year tends to draw us away from training. It's too busy, too much going on, holiday parties, the weather, or whatever. It's all lame excuses. We do have time this time of year to squeeze in some learning. And we do have time to remember those who did this job and those firefighters who died and learn from how they died this time of year. Take a look at these links we have down below. Print out the reports and pass this stuff around. Don't worry about sugar cookies dirty in the reports or eggnog spilling on them. Don't fret about holiday candle wax dripping on these reports. And mistletoe, it's no problem. The reports will be fine. Print out the reports, put them on your bulletin boards, or forward this information, whatever it takes, to all the firefighters in your department. Or print these reports on green and red paper and put them in their mailboxes, if that's what it takes to get their attention. So many of these line-of-duty deaths are repeats of past line-of-duty deaths. And having, especially your younger and newer firefighters, knowing and learning about these fires and these fires and these firefighters can matter a great deal. I've got a bunch of other items to cover with you as well. A firefighter died last week in Garrett County, Maryland. Ed Wilburn was responding to a fire call last Saturday afternoon when his pickup truck plunged into a ravine. He was flown out and he was pronounced dead. The 64-year-old firefighter Wilburn suffered a medical emergency while driving. Our hearts and prayers go out to all firefighters in Maryland over that. And in Australia, a firefighter died. More than a dozen houses in two states were destroyed this past week. The firefighter fell from a trailer and was struck by a following vehicle in eastern Victoria State, where nine houses were incinerated in the towns of Gaffney Creek and A1 Settlement. So our hearts and prayers go out to our firefighting friends, brothers and sisters in Australia over the situation they've been dealing there as well. Also, some New Zealand firefighters were burned also in related fires, and again, our hearts and prayers go out to them. Last week, we were all kind of taken back when another very serious apparatus crash occurred in Horry County, South Carolina. As of this morning, the firefighters remained hospitalized several days after their apparatus turned over. I'm going to guess that some have been released, but some are still hospitalized. Lieutenant John Velosin, 55 years old, suffered a pelvic fracture. He is listed in good condition at the Medical University in South Carolina. Philip McElroy, 33, also at MUSC, is listed in fair condition. And firefighter M.J. Chaddock, 29 years old, suffered an orbital fracture and was listed stable at last report. These firefighters from the Hickory Grove, Horry County Fire Station were responding to a structure fire, and they lost control of their apparatus and overturned about 14 miles from the fire. So we wish everyone the best in a quick recovery and hope that there's something that we all can learn from that very serious apparatus crash. Also, this past weekend, here's one for you. Two fire apparatus collided during a parade in Pennsylvania, during a parade that was held for a high school football team, injuring three firefighters. The apparatus driving early Saturday was celebrating the final game of the year for Pottsville, Pennsylvania. The parade followed the big game, which Pottsville lost 28-23 to General McLean High School in Edinburgh. Around 12:20 a.m., traffic stopped in the Mount Carbon Fire Company apparatus rear-ended another apparatus from the East End Fire Company. Three firefighters were injured, but all were treated and released, which is a good thing. Both apparatus were damaged, but Mount Carbon Mayor Jeff Dunkel said he was just grateful no one was seriously injured. Quote, "It could have been a lot worse, especially since one of the firefighters wasn't wearing a seatbelt," said the mayor. Great observation, Mayor. And if a firefighter was killed, it would have been an official line of duty death. I don't know, gang. Something about firefighters unnecessarily dying versus firefighters risking their lives to save somebody's life. There's a big difference in those line of duty deaths. But we'll talk about that some other time. If you've been watching the news and following it, the Minneapolis Fire Department has been going through a very difficult time. Their firefighter has been inundated with lawsuits and accusations of sexual harassment. And as of Friday, a fifth lawsuit has been filed against the Minneapolis fire chief. So we'll be watching that and hopefully be able to get that chief on for an interview soon and talk about what it's been like. At least we're going to extend that invitation. In the meantime, we can only imagine what the firefighters in Minneapolis are going through, as well as the chief, as well as those who are accusing her of the activities that allegedly occurred. It's a tough time. Kind of takes the enjoyment away from being a member of a fire department. Another very serious line of duty death that occurred just a few weeks ago was the two firefighters killed in East Sussex, England. So again, our prayers and thoughts go out to those involved with the East Sussex Fire Department and the two firefighters who lost their lives. Last week, a Dallas fire rescue veteran was badly burned before he was saved from a house fire last Wednesday in North Dallas. The fire officer was one of at least three firefighters trapped inside the single-family dwelling that day. He was taken to Parkland Memorial Hospital with secondary burns on his face, chest, and hands. The others got out without any injuries, so we're glad that the firefighters were able to escape there, and we wish that fire officer a quick recovery from that situation. Here's an interesting twist for you. Firefighters with beards. A lawmaker in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, says he's going to introduce legislation to help bearded Amish firefighters who are barred from training with protective SCBAs. The state fire code prohibits such training for bearded firefighters because the mask is unable to fully seal against the skin. However, Amish religious custom dictates that married men wear beards, and this means they are unable to get the training needed for state certification. Among other things, the number of certified firefighters can affect the amount of federal and state grant money a fire company can receive. Representative Gordon Denlinger, Republican from Lancaster, told about 40 firefighters on Wednesday he's drafted legislation that the State Fire Commission may not violate a person's religious freedom. On the other hand, a Philadelphia, Pennsylvania Common Pleas judge ruled in September of 2005 that a Muslim firefighter was not entitled to wear a beard on the job because of the safety risk that facial hair posed. You know, I've been fortunate to be friends with a number of Amish firefighters in Lancaster County, and these are some down-and-dirty, no-nonsense, kick-butt firefighters who are serious about the job. So here we see, again, another balance between religion and their abilities to fight fires. And I know they do wear masks, but I guess it's a matter of them being able to get certified wearing those masks, so we'll see where that one goes. Hopefully you've all been following the saga in Rockaway Township, New Jersey, where the state police, or a state police officer, arrested a fire chief. The Route 80 crash dispute between the state police and the firefighters that led to the deputy chief's arrest is still hot, with both sides accusing each other of ignoring procedures and endangering lives. The township hired an attorney to represent their deputy chief. Good for them. It's nice to see local governments stand up and back their firefighters. That's a refreshing change from a lot of places that would have backed away and said, well, we can't get involved in that and all that kind of stuff. Deputy Chief Robert Jenkins was handcuffed and hauled off to the state police barracks after arguing with State Trooper Kevin Fritz at the scene of a rollover. Deputy Chief Jenkins is charged with disobeying a state trooper and disorderly conduct and is scheduled to appear in court. However, the case is being expected to transfer out of the area because so many people know so many people. Jenkins last week said that he acted properly in ordering a fire truck to park diagonally across a right travel lane to create a safety buffer for his first responders. He's trying to protect everybody, it sounds like. He's quoted as saying, I'm willing to lose a truck, but I'm not willing to lose one of my members. Of course, a state police spokesman, Captain Al Delafave, countered that the parked fire truck was hazardous, with no cones or flares to warn oncoming motorists, and according to police, and that Fritz, the trooper, did the right thing in ordering it removed. The state trooper states or made the comment, the only lives that were in jeopardy were the firefighters who were in the fire truck that was traveling in that portion of the lane. Obviously, Captain Al Delafave from the New Jersey State Police has never seen the video put out by the International Association of Chiefs of Police called Your Vest Won't Stop This Bullet. And we have a link attached to that. If any of you want to check out that video, look at it and share it with your local police so maybe you can find a happy ground or a common area where everybody can agree where we're going to block and protect our personnel. Nobody wants traffic unnecessarily blocked. It causes more hazards and it can be a problem. However, when first responders, particularly fire and EMS personnel and the cops, are working on the scene, why wouldn't you want to block and protect, irrespective of cars being backed up or traffic being slowed down? We got to protect our people. Firefighters are being struck on a regular basis. So we'll keep an eye on what happens in Rockaway Township. And with any luck, maybe Deputy Chief Jenkins will be a guest on our show soon, and we can talk to him about that. You know, I spoke to Jack Sullivan from ResponderSafety.com, and they have 35 incidents of firefighters or EMS personnel struck in 06 so far. And that doesn't include incidents where apparatus was struck while at a scene. In some cases, a truck or ambulance was hit, but no injuries reported as well. Those 35 or so cases they have represents fire and EMS people being hit, not including police officers. It looks like the numbers are up from last year. The people, I guess it's, you know, XM and Sirius and all the radios and the stereos and then headphones and everything else, cell phones, who's paying attention while driving? Well, and we're out there, you know, putting our lives on the line, trying to save people on the highway, and you never know, you're going to get slammed into. Related to that story is a Waterford, Connecticut man was arrested for driving into a firefighter. Perhaps we ought to send this article to the New Jersey State Police. A local man in Waterford was charged last week with assault on a public safety officer after fire officials said he was struck or he struck a firefighter with his SUV. William Morrell, 47 years old, was also charged with evading responsibility and breach of peace. The incident happened last week while firefighters were putting out a car fire. Morrell's route was being blocked by the fire truck, so he drove over the fire hose in an attempt to maneuver out of the narrow street. He wanted out, said the local fire chief. Matt Carson of the Quaker Hill Fire Department said that firefighters told Morrell to stop, and he backed up and nearly hit one firefighter. He tried to back over one of the deputy chiefs on the scene. Deputy Chief Monty Fielder said when firefighter Jason Dickey saw the man backing up toward Fielder, he began banging on the hood of that guy's Mercedes SUV to get him to stop. Those are well insulated, and he probably had a stereo on and didn't notice any of the firefighters. Morrell then put the vehicle in forward, knocked the deputy chief over, and took off through the back of a driveway and into a field behind a house, looping around a street in an attempt to come out another way. However, his path was blocked by an ambulance. He told the cop, "I just ran over one of my guys." That's what the chief said. "They just ran over one of my guys. I want him arrested now." And the cops did arrest him. At the time, though, there was only one Waterford police officer on the scene, and the driver apparently resisted arrest, leading three firefighters to jump on the man to aid the officer in making arrest. Now, that's good relations between police and fire. So be careful on the highway, man. I'm telling you, it's so scary out there. Some of you may know I was struck back in 2000. It's not a pretty thing. I was lucky. I just had some very minor injuries. But, boy, I'll tell you, it scares the living daylights out of you. Just a couple quick final notes before we get to the main part of our program. You may note that there's a new report out from NIOSH regarding the two firefighters being killed when they were struck by an exterior wall collapse at a commercial building fire during overhaul in Atlanta. While all NIOSH reports provide critical information, of interest is this one particularly where the exterior wall collapsed. One of the fatalities had just been interviewed on TV, stating the fire was under control, mutual aid was being returned, and right following the interview, just moments later, he and another firefighter were killed when the wall collapsed. Again, this is hours after the initial alarm. The exterior walls were made of concrete blocks, but numerous layers of varied siding materials covered the front wall of the building and hid the underlying concrete block from view. The fire department was dispatched around 1730 hours, and they were returning companies around 2100 hours. Now, initially, they had very heavy fire conditions, fire through the roof, etc. The remaining firefighters noticed that concrete block walls on both sides of the building were leaning outward, so sections of the wall that were bulging outward were pulled down. But around 2130 hours, the two firefighters, one a captain and another firefighter, along with a third member, were stretching an inch-and-a-half line or inch-and-three-quarter line to the front door to get water on hot spots when the front wall collapsed, killing them. The two firefighters were standing under the overhanging awning at the main entrance when the awning gave way, killing the two. At the same time, an exterior wall collapsed outward, burying them under the falling concrete blocks, bricks, and sheet metal siding. This happened, gang, during overhaul. We need to think. You want to put hot spots out, do it from far away. Establish a collapse zone and never, ever enter the collapse zone unless command orders you to. And even then, there needs to be questions on why we'd be re-entering a collapse zone. To me, once a collapse zone is established, it never gets better. It doesn't self-heal. If it's going to collapse now, it's going to collapse later. And only a wrecking crane or a building engineer would tell me that it's safe to go in. Why take the risk? Unless there's somebody trapped in there, but 5 hours after the fire, come on. We sometimes just want to go in with a hose line and knock down hot spots for whatever reasons. Leave them alone. Hit them with a deck gun. Hit them with a tower ladder. Stay out of the way. Another quick note. President Bush is going to be nominating Chief Greg Cade of Virginia Beach to be the United States Fire Administrator. We're pretty excited about that. Greg's an old friend, and we think he'll do a good job considering the circumstances around the job. What do I mean by that? Greg is certainly qualified. He has a lot of great capabilities, and particularly he's been very active in the area of firefighter safety and survival, being a very active part of the IFC's health and safety programs. And we absolutely know he'll look out for the interests of firefighters. But why do we have concern with this? Nothing to do with Greg. Has everything to do with the position. We hope that the status of the U.S. Fire Administration and the fire administrator position will be seriously looked at by those inside the Beltway and receive serious consideration for increased status, which will provide a greater voice for firefighters within the Department of Homeland Security. As far as we're concerned, DHS sees the United States Fire Administration, all involved with fire, as a pain. We seem to interfere with their mission, whatever that. Why they feel that way, I don't know, but there's certainly some who feel that way. Just take a look at our history. Look at the organizational chart and see where the fire service is. So we hope maybe there'll be some changes. On the other hand, we can dream, can't we? And final note, we wish the Atlanta Fire Department and the family of firefighter Stephen Solomon our deepest prayers and our heartfelt sorrow in the loss of firefighter Stephen Solomon. Steve, married with four kids, was killed at that house fire in Atlanta on Thanksgiving evening. Investigators found the fire was started by an unattended candle left by homeless people, and there has been an arrest. Solomon was with Atlanta Fire Rescue for 4 months. He transferred to the department after nearly 6 years on the Macon-Bibb County Fire Department. So again, our deepest sympathies go out to the Atlanta Fire Rescue Department and especially the family and friends of firefighter Stephen Solomon. And that's some of the issues that are hot. Now we're going to go to our guest after a quick break. Our guest this week is Dr. Grace LeMasters from the University of Cincinnati. Don't shut off your radio. Listen to this. You're not going to believe it. This discussion with her is going to make the hair on your hands stand up. The University of Cincinnati did a study on firefighting cancer. They didn't study 20 or 30 firefighters. They studied 100,000 firefighters. Unbelievable. So hang on. We'll be back in just a second with Dr. Grace LeMasters, who's going to talk very frankly and in English that I and you both will understand and what the environment we're responding to is doing to us. We'll be back in just a second.
Welcome to the latest edition of Through the Smoke with Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, addressing issues impacting all firefighters' safety, health, and morale.
We're back. This is Through the Smoke at RadioAtFirehouse.com. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. The show is being produced by Matt Evans and Pete Matthews from Firehouse.com. You know, a couple weeks ago, scanning the internet, I came across an article that I guess it shouldn't have shook me up, but it did. And the article, published in early November, was a piece that said, firefighters face increased risk for certain cancers. It said University of Cincinnati environmental health researchers have determined that firefighters are significantly more likely to develop four different types of cancers than workers in other fields. Their findings suggest that the equipment we've been using in the past didn't do such a good job in protecting us against cancer-causing agents that we encounter in our profession. The researchers, for example, found that firefighters are twice as likely to develop testicular cancer and significantly higher rates of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, prostate cancer, than non-firefighters. The researchers also confirmed previous findings that firefighters are greater risk for multiple melanoma. Our guest today is Dr. Grace LeMasters, Ph.D., from the University of Cincinnati. Dr. LeMasters, welcome.
Thank you.
Just a little bit of background. Dr. LeMasters is a professor of epidemiology. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, that's fine.
Not bad, huh? And for over the past two decades, she has conducted research on those studies related to respiratory disease and other effects that interfere with people. But this study here, you know what? Firefighters, we love people, we care about people, but man, you're talking about us now, and you've come up with this study that really, to me, has blown us away. But on the other hand, we knew this. It shouldn't be a shock. So I guess, Doc, tell us where the thoughts came from to even start this study.
Well, of course, I think 9/11 heightened everybody's concern and interest in the dangers of firefighting. And we knew that international agencies have listed many of the chemicals that firefighters are exposed to as carcinogenic to humans or probable or possible carcinogenic to humans. And firefighters are exposed really to a soup of potentially cancer-causing agents, even simply soot. One thinks of soot or wood dust as being benign, but actually soot is a composite of many chemicals, and soot is considered a group one cancer-causing agent that is known to be carcinogenic to humans.
Let me comment on that, I guess. And how much exposure, I guess, did you have prior to this to firefighters?
Well, not a lot of exposures to firefighters. I mean, my background is in occupational exposures, and I've studied lots of different occupations. Particularly, I've done a lot of work with the military.
Okay.
And certainly have seen the military exposed to a lot of complex mixtures like firefighters.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that would be my number one area that is related to firefighters because of their exposures of the military to fuels and diesel exhaust.
Sure.
And styrene and benzene, many of the same things that firefighters are exposed to.
You know, as a firefighter for 34 years, I'm thinking for many, many years I didn't wear my mask unless, quote, absolutely necessary, and I know now how stupid that was. But until I really got a hold of your study here and spent some time dissecting it, it didn't dawn on me that coming home with soot covered on my face or on my arms was just as much, if not more, of a problem than inhalation. And I'll tell you, I think the soot issue is going to wake a bunch of us up.
Well, if anything good can come out of this, I want to get the message out that we should all remember that our skin is the largest organ of our body. And when you are heading into fighting a fire, you get hot, your skin tissue is, the vessels in your tissue are dilating, and it makes it even more likely that you can absorb these chemical residue through your skin. So yes, we still feel that inhalation, respiratory issues are still important,
absolutely.
I don't think nearly enough attention has been given to the bodies being covered with soot and other residues as a result of these exposures. I have talked with firefighters, and they've told me directly that they often come from fires with their whole bodies covered in soot underneath their clothing. And this can be, I think, both prevented and also treated. I mean, the first thing firefighters should always do the minute they get back to the firehouse is scrub their bodies with soap, get all residues. They have to understand that soot is like having just cancer-causing chemicals covering their body. And, you know, with the testicular cancer, I mean, testicular cancers are generally cancers of young men. And we feel that part of this might be associated with the groin area being covered in soot. And firefighters not taking the time to wash well. You know, the first occupational cancer that was discovered was in chimney sweeps. And,
huh.
And you know, chimney sweeps, and this well over 100 years ago, 150 years ago. And the reason chimney sweeps were getting scrotal cancer was because they were going down chimneys, and so their groin area was exposed to soot. So I think if we can use this analogy that, you know, that was the first known occupational exposure and cancer, that we can understand what we're seeing now with testicular cancer, which had the 100% increase of testicular cancer in firefighters compared to non-firefighters.
Absolutely amazing. And again, you know, for years currently we'll come back from a fire and or even operating at a fire. Once the fire's knocked down, we'll take our mask off and maybe open up the coat and that sort of thing, just to kind of cool down and relax, which is fine if we're doing it out in the rehab sector. But unfortunately, many of us are going back inside and, the smoke's not too bad. We can operate in there. And you come out covered in the soot because it's the fire still smoldering or even part of your overhaul, or not wear gloves. And to a non-fire person, people would be surprised how dumb we are sometimes in not using the equipment we have currently. Now, I agree with your study that we absolutely have to come up with better ways. As a matter of fact, the 2007 edition of NFPA Standard 1971, which is our protective clothing standard, includes the option for CBRN levels of protection. And it's important to remember that the same protections that isolate a firefighter from CBRN contaminants may also be helpful in isolating us from other contaminants that may pose this cancer or health risk that you were talking about. I know that there's the IFF, for example, has a project out there called Project Heroes, which is a set of gear where your SCBA exhalation actually feeds air back into your gear and provides sort of a positive pressure atmosphere to your gear, not allowing stuff to infiltrate as easily. So that's kind of exciting stuff, and there's other studies out there as well and other prototypes as well. But currently, we find ourselves not wearing our gloves, not wearing our masks. So, Doc, would you say probably the best thing we could do right now? Now, you mentioned about cleaning up as soon as we get back to the firehouse, and that's great. Washing, soaping up, you know, really head-to-toe kind of a cleaning. But even while operating at a call, how about the theory of no exposed skin?
Well, that, of course, would be ideal. And, you know, anything that can be done to prevent the skin exposure would go a long way in decreasing cancer rates in firefighters. Now, even with wearing your coat, even when the coat is closed, you know, smoke can just get underneath that coat.
Sure.
And smoke can get in the sleeves and under the pant leg. So we need a system in place that smoke is not allowed entry into the skin and the body by really blocking out entrances of smoke and soot to the body.
That's unbelievable. Again, we've thought respiratory all these years, and absolutely that's a major. There's no question. I mean, inhalation. But I personally, and I don't know how many other firefighters personally, gave much thought to the absorption of smoke creeping in. I mean, we come home from a fire, and quite honestly, we like smelling the way we do. Wow, we were in there, we did our job today, we feel good about it. Little do we know that what we're bringing in, we're inviting, we're allowing in the soot and the smoke that you just talked about.
Well, you know, I've talked with firefighters, and they said, you know, they have told me that some of the younger firefighters in particular sort of consider this sort of a badge of courage that they are covered in soot. But what they are covered in is cancer-causing agents. It's like benzopyrene is one of the most potent carcinogens we know, like you find in cigarette smoke, for example. Well, benzopyrene is also found in combustion products that firefighters are facing. And so if they look at their skin and see that soot on their face, on their neck, on their bodies, that's like saying your body is covered in cancer-causing agents.
I don't think you could say it any more plain. I mean, any firefighter listening to the show, and we're very fortunate that we have probably 150,000 listeners at this point. We haven't looked at the stats since the last show, but I know that the firefighters really are interested in the guests that we're very fortunate to have on the show, and I just can't imagine that anybody wouldn't be taken back by this information. You know, you talk about the 50% higher risk of multiple melanoma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and the prostate cancer, as well as the double the risk of testicular cancer. Can we look at each of those cancers for a few minutes, and you just explain us a little bit more what is testicular cancer and what we should be looking out for signs of in testicular cancer?
Well, I also just want to say, I know we focused on the four that we've listed as probable, but we also found significantly st- statistically significantly elevated cancers for other cancers, including malignant melanoma, brain, rectum, and the mouth. So I think we have to not ignore these others. So just let me make my point here that 8 of the 20 cancers we examined were statistically significantly elevated in firefighters. This is phenomenal.
That's a big deal. And you, and for those who are not familiar, your study included more than 110,000 firefighters. This wasn't looking at 30 or 40 firefighters. This was, honestly, we have about 1 million firefighters in this country, so you looked at a tenth of the population.
Well,
that's a lot of firefighters.
The population included not just U.S. firefighters. It included U.S. as well as firefighters in the U.K., Germany, New Zealand, France, Australia,
wow.
Canada, Denmark. What this study did was to, it was a composite. It took all the data from 32 other studies,
okay,
and compiled the results of the study and looked at the risk factors and the consistency among the studies. Until you have a sufficient sample size, many of the cancers are so rare that it's hard to see a significant effect because you have no power. You don't have a large enough sample size. So we did what you call a meta-analysis by combining information and data from 32 studies for this meta-analysis.
Now, let me ask you a question, since we're talking at the stats with the U.S. and international. Did you see any significant difference or anything interesting related between the United States firefighters and the rest, or were they all just grouped together so there was no way to tell who was who?
Yes, we grouped them all together.
Okay, so we're looking at firefighting period.
Firefighting
as opposed
period,
to, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so, and I mean, we're all responding basically to the same types of fires, although the building construction may be different. In certain parts of Europe, what's burning inside these buildings today, which is primarily plastics, and it's really what we're dealing with, from carpeting to the furniture to the other stuff that's inside the buildings. We're still dealing pretty much with the same stuff, aren't we?
Well, yes, we are. I mean, I would say at least half the studies were all in the U.S., so, you know, that was the bulk of the population, but it isn't just plastics. I want to emphasize that wood dust is a class 1 carcinogen. So, you know, when you're in areas where it's a wood burning situation, an old building,
house fires.
Right, fires. We're not talking about a big, and these studies were done from the 1925 to the 1997. Which the bulk of them is, probably in the late 70s and 80 period,
okay,
to early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not talking about chemical fires. I mean, the fires are your usual, your typical.
What we call our bread and butter fires, yeah.
That's right.
Unbelievable. Now, I also noticed that you talked about the diesel exhaust issue, and we have come to be a little bit smarter about that in the last couple of years. Diesel exhaust systems, fuel exhaust systems, are more predominant in most fire stations now. Matter of fact, it's pretty rare you don't run into them anymore because of what's come up there. But I guess your comment about the wood burning, here we think wood is natural, it's just wood burning. But most wood is treated. But you're saying even natural wood being untreated is still a problem to us.
Yes, it wood dust has been in forest fires, for example, and has been associated with cancers in the nasal cavity and the nasal sinuses. So wood dust is a carcinogen. I mean, we are concerned about wood workers, for example, who have a lot of exposures to wood dust, and it has been associated with nasal and sinus type cancers. So things that we take as being sort of natural doesn't mean that under combustion situations, even, or in very dusty situations where they can enter through the nasal tract and get right into the bloodstream, you see.
We're talking to Dr. Grace LeMasters of the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine. Dr. LeMasters has her PhD. We're talking about firefighters and cancer. We'll be right back.
Is it sometimes a little hard to see through the smoke? Do fire service, rescue, and EMS issues work you up just a bit? Maybe more than just a bit? If they don't, check your pulse. It's normal for firefighters and responders to get worked up over hot issues when you love the job so much. Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, Firehouse.com commentator and Firehouse Magazine columnist, hosts Through the Smoke, an internet broadcast and podcast that addresses issues impacting all firefighters, such as safety, health, and morale. Don't ignore the issues and maintain the status quo. Take an interest in issues that impact you, the frontline responder. Join Billy, special guests, and firefighters around the country and the world regularly on Through the Smoke, only on Firehouse.com.
Hey, this is Through the Smoke, radio at Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. My guest this week is Dr. Grace LeMasters from the University of Cincinnati, talking about firefighting cancer. And during the break, we were chatting, and I said, stop, don't talk. I want to get this on because we need to talk about this. The comment I made was during the break, I said, man, this is amazing. I can tell you on numerous occasions, I've gone back to bed after a fire, too exhausted to take a shower. Our producer, Pete, who's a veteran firefighter, was just commenting that he took a day to help his brother move. His tones went off. He responded, came back, covered with soot, and spent the day moving his brother. And I think many of us done that, from one time or another. And Dr. LeMasters commented, and you talked about being wrapped up. Go ahead, Doc. Tell us about that.
Well, when your body has soot and other chemical residues on it from the fire, which just looks like black smoke on your skin, when you have clothes on or you fall into bed and cover yourself with a sheet, it's like putting a Band-Aid around your skin, and that helps aid the absorption of these chemicals through the skin and into your bloodstream. So it's like putting cancer on your skin, putting a bandage over it, and then letting your body absorb it for however many hours.
You know, what's coming to mind here is, when we respond to a hazardous materials call, our whole mentality changes. The same firefighter who has no problem running into a building, getting covered with soot, maybe not wearing their mask, if they're dispatched to a hazmat incident, they'll respond in slowly, think it out, get people like yourselves with a whole bunch of letters after their name to help us figure out what we're going into, because, quote, we don't want to get in there. That stuff will kill us. But yet, this is really the same thing. And I guess what I'm thinking is, we have to rush in many cases to make a difference. But the way we go in, what we're wearing when we go in, how we're wearing our stuff is critical. But once we come out, it almost sounds like we need to go through decontamination.
Well, you do. You need to, it's not a formal decontamination, but soap and water and getting all the soot out of your scalp and your hair is the decontamination you need to do. Every fire for firefighters should be considered a hazmat response.
Right.
Because of the burning combustion products are known carcinogens. Asbestos, benzene, 1,3-butadiene, chloroform, silica, formaldehyde, soot, scarring, vinyl chloride, wood dust, and as I mentioned, benzapyrene contained in polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. I know that's a lot of chemicals, but that's just from, burning of any products, plastics and wood and carpeting and et cetera. Now, you had mentioned a few minutes ago about the diesel engines, and that, you know, most firehouses, I hope now, are venting out the diesel exhaust. But
right.
But when you're on site, though, usually the fire engines are still running, are they not?
Oh, of course, yes, right.
Okay, well, in that, the load of diesel exhaust particles that are you're being exposed to from that diesel engine is huge. So, you know, you're getting, you know, particles that are just exploding all around you.
So between what we're bringing with us to what we're responding to, I mean, we're creating an environment of death.
Yeah, well, you know, all I'm saying is the diesel engines, just because they're sitting out there on the street, does not mean you're not getting a horrendous level of exposure to diesel exhaust particles, which we know are associated with cancer. And we also know it's associated with asthma, allergy. I mean, I'm talking about cancer, but if people have, you know, emphysema, any kind of respiratory disease or asthma, it's going to definitely increase the severity of these symptoms being around a running diesel engine.
Well, and in some cases, the apparatus is right in front. The smoke's coming out of the building, and there's a couple rigs parked around there, all with their engines running, many times peak running, because they're operating their pumps. And one particular position, or actually, we talked already about the firefighters that are going inside to fight the fire with some level of protective clothing. And again, I can't emphasize enough, we need to start wearing more of what we have. And as we move into more advanced forms of bunker gear, that's great. But we've got firefighters still not protecting basically the no exposed skin seems to make sense. Wear your mask and protect yourself as best you can. When you get out, clean up, wash up, get all that stuff off of you. But the other positions we have on the fire ground are the command officers standing outside, not wearing, in many cases, not wearing any protective equipment. The pump operators, the ladder operators, all within this environment you just described, without any protective equipment.
Yeah, they're being fully exposed to all these chemicals, this laundry list of chemicals I just gave you. I mean, firefighters are chronically and continuously exposed to complex mixtures with many known as well as suspected carcinogens in them. So anyone standing around the fire truck, not going in the building, they're still getting soot and residual exposures, not to mention the diesel exhaust.
Right. Also, we've also just recently, and again, we've known this for a while, but it just for some reason lately here, you need to know that in our business, we've not been as focused on health, safety, and survival in years past as we have been in the last 3 to 5 years. We've really kicked it up a major notch, and we're a lot more conscientious about what we're doing and how we're doing it. But unfortunately, in the past, it's something that just was not much of a priority, or it was in different pockets, but we're really getting more focused. And one report that just came out, that has woken up a number of folks is the fact that another product to combustion is the off-gassing of cyanide in a lot of the stuff we're breathing as well. I know the Providence Fire Department went through a very difficult time earlier this year where a very alert young physician in a trauma center who was brought in several firefighters suffering from smoke inhalation did the unusual test to test for cyanide and discovered significant levels. So, I mean, we're getting hit from all over.
Yep. Well, I think also that senior firefighters need to mentor younger firefighters, because younger firefighters are looking up to the senior firefighters and looking at them for guidance and direction. And if the senior firefighters are saying, oh, don't worry about this, look, I am 50 or 60, I'm still doing fine, they're not being good role models for the younger people that are coming along, and they may not have cancer and they may never get cancer. I mean, it's a combination of environmental exposures, our daily life activities, our genes. But senior firefighters could do a great service for our future firefighters by mentoring them and being good role models and showing them what you need to do to protect yourself and them doing it too.
You certainly have grasped us well. you've picked up on it well. I know you're short for time today, and we're going to wind up. I would like to invite you back in the future. I suspect we're going to have a lot of interest in this show, and perhaps we can have you along with some folks who are firsthand victims of cancer. I've got some that have offered to come and talk with us on the show, whose cancers are related to the stuff you're talking about, and I think it would make for an interesting show. We've had today with Dr. LeMasters. I'll give you a quick minute or two if you want to wrap up with any final comments.
Well, my final comment, I guess, would be that I think firefighter associations have to become very proactive, making sure that all firefighters have at least two sets of turnout gear, because when they come back from the firehouse and they only have one set, then they're doing the same thing. They're putting back on the turnout gear, which has on the inside of it covered in soot and cancer-causing agents. So I think the associations have to be very proactive about seeing that our firefighters who are public servants are well protected, and we need to put pressure on Congress to try to develop equipment that firefighters will not be, that aren't hot, that they can wear, that they will keep clothes, but that can breathe, you know, and let the heat out of their body, but keep that smoke and soot from getting in their body. A lot can be done. We just have to focus energy and effort on this.
Every once in a while, we run into somebody who really seems to care about what we're doing, and Dr. LeMasters, you certainly qualify for that recognition, and we appreciate you being on the show with us. Our guest has been Dr. Grace LeMasters, a professor at the University of Cincinnati, a graduate of the University of Cincinnati, and also a graduate of Indiana University of Bloomington, and she has received numerous awards and decades of experience and written paper after paper on the subject of people taking care of themselves based upon what we find in the environment. And now she's our latest friend in the fire service, helping us deal with our abilities to survive longer. Dr. LeMasters, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, and anything I can do to help, I'm happy to do it.
Thanks again. Gang, you've been listening to Through the Smoke. This is radio at firehouse.com. From all of us at Firehouse, from Terry, myself, the kids, my brother and sister firefighters at Loveland Sims, we wish everybody a very, very happy and healthy Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate, whatever's important to you. It's family time. Spend time with your family and do something to take care of yourself so you can spend more time with your family. And naturally, we wish all of you a great 2007. We look forward to seeing you with even more shows in 2007. God bless. Take care.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.